Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading from the Big Bend Sentinel.
New Nutrition Shop Opens in Presidio by Beck Andrew Salgado, June 10th, 2020, read by Melanie. Presidio. The sun beats down and heat ricochets off the Presidio asphalt, escaping into a quaint storefront. One is greeted with an eager voice exclaiming, "Welcome to Inspire Nutrition," before receiving one of the many combinations of shakes and refreshing fruit or spice teas available. This is the dream of Ojinaga native Anel Aranda, a dream that she has since made into a reality. Aranda is the owner of the new Inspire Nutrition, a shake and tea shop located on O'Reilly Street in downtown Presidio. Aranda opened the shop with the hopes of providing a healthy option for people who live in Presidio, but the story of how she opened the shop has been years in the making. Aranda, who left her home in New Mexico and is staying with family in Presidio to start her nutritional drink business, said that she had an idea and wanted to go for it. Aranda said she was first inspired about 3 years ago when, while living in New Mexico, she was introduced to her now good friend, Kat Ramirez. Ramirez, who also owns a nutritional drink shop, said her friendship with Aranda started when Aranda, who didn't speak English at the time, would stop by Ramirez's club with an interest in selling drinks and losing weight. In the 3 years since they met, Ramirez said Aranda took it upon herself to learn English, lose 30 pounds, and build up a significant customer base for her nutritious drinks. After just over a year of working with Ramirez at her shop, Aranda expressed a desire to open her own, to which Ramirez said, "Now is the time to go for it." Ramirez also expressed an admiration for Aranda's work ethic, saying that if anyone deserved to be written about, it is Aranda. This past week, Aranda officially opened Inspire Nutrition and enjoyed a busy grand opening that she deemed a success. As far as what Aranda envisions her shop being, she said she wants it to be different. Not like a Starbucks where you just go and drink, but rather she wants to get to know the customers and become a place in the community where people can come to socialize. While Aranda does not have tables yet due to COVID-19, this more intimate experience with customers is scored by things like a community wall where visitors can sign their names, her first dollar on display, and shrine of Aranda's late grandmother. "It's more like a family-friendly place. I want people to come here and make friends," said Aranda. When asked about the name Inspire Nutrition, Aranda said that when she first encountered fitness and nutritious drinks, they were something that made me feel inspired. And she wants to do something with her shop that will help inspire other people in a similar way. She also alluded to starting exercise classes in Presidio Parks for the community to attend. As far as long-term aspirations, Aranda hopes to open additional shops in places like Marfa, Alpine, and Van Horn. While she acknowledged that the prospect of opening a new business can be intimidating, Aranda simply said, "If you have a dream, you go see if it's going to work."
Hello, this is Sonia reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, July 2nd, 2020. Water Carnival Fireworks Show Next by Steve Fountain. The annual City of Fort Stockton Fireworks Show and the Water Carnival announced respective cancellations this week in the wake of state-imposed restrictions on outdoor gatherings of 100 or more people. In reducing gatherings from 500 to 100 people, Governor Greg Abbott did give local officials the power to allow larger gatherings. However, a joint session of the Fort Stockton City Council and the Pecos County Commissioner's Court held June 29 saw both bodies vote to not take action on an agenda item that would have allowed larger gatherings locally. The dominoes from the decision resulted in the city's fireworks show at Rooney Park and the water carnival at the Comanche Springs Pool being canceled. The Miss Fort Stockton pageant will be held on Saturday, July 18, with limited seating and a live stream on Facebook by the Pioneer, according to organizer Lisa Granado. The discussion at the joint meeting centered on an increase in confirmed cases, not only in Pecos County, but larger spikes in neighboring counties, including Brewster. A shared concern was that having the Rooney Park fireworks show would bring in attendees from other counties where shows were canceled. We've had four active cases that came from contractions when people traveled out of the county, Mayor Chris Alexander said. Alexander, who is one of two people who pick up, set up, launch, and clean up the fireworks at the annual show, also said that there was no way to manage the size and social distancing of a crowd within the park, much less people in vehicles parked into adjacent open areas. Councilman Ruben Falcón said he was concerned that a spike in active Pecos County cases would force a rollback in occupancy at local business from its current level back down to 25%. We have businesses that are holding on, said Falcón, who owns a local restaurant. They might not make it through a rollback. Council Mike Arreta, along with Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster, backed the viewpoint of limiting crowds and public events will help limit the spread of the virus. A statement issued by the Water Carnival organizers at about 11 p.m. on June 29 read, "Unfortunately, this year's Water Carnival show has been canceled due to the new guidelines concerning COVID-19. According to Granado, rehearsals were underway and props had been built. This year's production was being headed by the script contest-winning team of Caitlin Pacheco and her aunt, Dalila Lara. It was called How Not to Propose in Vegas. Ironically, Pacheco was named Miss Fort Stockton in 2018, the year the Water Carnival was canceled due to repairs at the Comanche Springs pool. The Annie Riggs Museum Summer Concert Series, which was moved from the museum's patio to Zero Stone Park for better social distancing options, had said its July 9 show had been canceled and that its board will meet to decide the fate of the remainder of the series. As of the Pioneer's press deadline, the Live at Zero Stone concert by Bland Scott is still on for 7:30 p.m. Friday, July 3rd. Hello, this is Sonia reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, June 25th, 2020. Fireworks show on, but related events next, by Steve Fountain. Fireworks will fly over Fort Stockton on 4th of July night, but related games, vendors, and activities have been shut down due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Ira Ann previously canceled its show. Sheffield, however, is planning a parade, food contest, games, and fireworks starting at 6 p.m. on the 4th. The Fort Stockton Fireworks Show will be launched from Rooney Park as normal. However, there will be no official events in the park, nor vendors at the event. While no organized vendor area will be set up on site this year, food trucks with a current health permit could legally set up in the park. Music provided by a DJ will be played in conjunction with the fireworks show. This is the first year that the annual Independence Day event moved from the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce to the Fort Stockton Downtown Board. The fireworks are presented by the City of Fort Stockton, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and Charisma Car Wash. Ira Ann earlier canceled its show after the COVID-19 shutdown eliminated its fundraising activities for their fireworks purchase. The Sheffield Beautification Group has a day of activities planned starting with a parade at 6:15 p.m. The Ira Ann Lions Club will judge the best three floats. A most patriotic little Mr. and Mrs. pageant will be held, along with food contests and games. The fireworks show is sponsored by Truckload Fireworks. For more information in the Sheffield event, call 325-812-3310 or go to the Sheffield Beautification Group's Facebook page. Murder Tied to Robbery or Burglary by Steve Fountain. Christopher Key Galvan is accused of fatally shooting and stabbing Randy Clark during a burglary or robbery on June 16, according to an affidavit for probable cause filed by the Pecos County Sheriff's Office. Galvan, 30, is facing a felony capital murder charge in the death of Clark, 45, at his home at 866 Oriole Lane. If convicted, Galvan could face the death penalty. Galvan is also facing a charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon in connection to the June 15 drive-by shooting on Main Street in downtown Fort Stockton that left Adrian Olivas in critical condition, according to an affidavit filed by the Fort Stockton Police Department. Olivas is recovering from his wounds, according to police. The cases will likely be handled by the 112th District Attorney's Office. An affidavit is a sworn written statement by law enforcement that lists the reasons why a judge should charge an individual with a crime. It is not an admission or a determination of guilt. Based on the affidavits, Precinct 1 Justice of the Peace Ruben Salinas issued the arrest warrants for Galvan in both cases. Three sheriff's deputies went to Clark's house the evening of June 16 for a wellness check after his employer reported that he did not show up for work and was not responding to attempted contact, according to the affidavit. The officers were accompanied by the employer, who had a key to the house and his wife. Deputies found Clark's body in the ransacked house, according to the affidavit. The employer's wife, Galvan's stepmother, told deputies that Clark's Chevy truck, white horse trailer, three horses, and tackle were missing from the property. She also told deputies that Galvan had lived in a separate building on the property. Galvan's black Jeep Cherokee was found abandoned four blocks away on Chaparral Street. Galvan was found in Midland after a traffic stop on I-10. He was driving Clark's truck, according to the affidavit. He was held as a person of interest in Midland until the affidavit was filed and warrant issued. Drive-by shooting. The police affidavit did not list a suspected reason or motive for Galvan shooting Olivas. Galvan allegedly was in an SUV that was driven by a woman who he forced into the role. The SUV belonged to the woman's father, according to the affidavit. Galvan allegedly used a rifle to shoot at Olivas as he rode a bicycle on Main Street between 3rd and 4th Streets. The affidavit cites a witness to the shooting and video obtained for a nearby business in helping provide information in the case. Fort Stockton Police Chief Robert Lujan said Olivas is expected to recover from his wounds. He was initially listed in critical condition at MCH Odessa. Fort Stockton ISD. School starts August 3rd. Board rejects District Police Department, by Steve Fountain. With an eye toward the uncertainty of the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the coming school year, the Fort Stockton ISD School Board approved a new calendar for the 2020-2021 school year that will run classes from August 3rd to June 9. The 6-0 vote came during a 4-plus-hour regular meeting on June 22nd that also saw the board reject a resolution to establish a district police department. While the new calendar creates a start and end date, unanswered questions remain on what will happen in between as the district awaits word from the state. Elsewhere, in Pecos County, the Ira Ann Sheffield ISD will start classes on August 12 and end on May 18, while Buena Vista ISD will start August 10 and end May 27. The calendar uses the same number of instructional days and minutes as previously used. However, it extends the Christmas holiday break to 3 weeks, from December 21st to January 6, while adding 20 off days through weather days and open Fridays. The idea, according to Superintendent Ralph Trainum, was to have the students and staff away from campus during the traditional peak of the cold and flu season, as well as to give the district flexibility with the 20 open days in the event of another school shutdown. In response to a question from Flo Garcia III on having the flexibility to end the school year earlier if the open days are not needed, Trainum said that could be done. He told the board the principals were on board with the calendar. When asked about teachers' input, Trainum said that was handled through the principals at each campus. Remote class option. Trainum told the board that parents who do not feel comfortable having their children on campus will have the options of them taking classes remotely by computer, as was done during the COVID-19 shutdown in the spring. However, Trainum said that he is being told by the state that remote learning will only be available by computers and that the low-tech paper packets used last semester will not be approved by the state. That prompted Anastasio Dominguez to question how the district would address success for students in areas without or with limited internet access. Trainum said that he is exploring options locally, but is awaiting a final word for the state's governing education body, the Texas Education Agency. The challenge districts across the state are facing is that the TEA has yet to finalize policies for dealing with a COVID-19 case on a campus, what will be allowed for instruction, how to best seat students and staff to reduce the chance of community spread, along with a myriad of other questions. The district has yet to set dates, new enrollments, scheduling or changing classes, distribution of Chromebooks, and other traditional ramp-ups to the start of the school year. Once set, the district will post the information on its Facebook page and website, according to Beverly Olson, the superintendent's secretary. Police Department. 2 weeks after deadlocking 3-3 on a resolution to create a district police department, the board rejected it on a 4-2 vote. Alex Rivera, who voted for the resolution 2 weeks ago along with Dominguez and Tom Mizell, was not present. Billy Espino, who missed the previous meeting, joined Freddie Martinez, Flo Garcia III, and Sandra Marquez in voting against the resolution. The board met in closed session to, according to the agenda, discuss employment of SRO officers. The board emerged from the closed session and voted. There was no discussion of the matter in the open meeting, as was the case at its June 8th meeting. The City of Fort Stockton and the school district signed off on a deal for police to provide the SROs, school resource officers, with the district paying a portion of the cost. The agreement was in effect from August 1, 2018 to July 31, 2019. That agreement included a one-year extension unless a written termination was issued. The council approved an agreement at its December 17, 2019 meeting, but it was never approved by the FSISD. At the time, the police had two SROs and were flexing other staff to help at the schools due to shortages and hiring another three SROs, according to minutes from the meetings. Unable to reach a formal agreement for the 2019-2020 school year, the extension was exercised. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic-driven school closures, police stopped providing SROs in March at the request of the district, Rodriguez said. There have been no active discussions with the district regarding the SRO situation since December, Rodriguez said. The city sent the district a letter on May 1st terminating the original agreement, thus eliminating the window to operate on another extension. The Pioneer questioned the legality of the district having a closed session discussion on the matter since the district does not employ SROs, nor were any individuals by name were being discussed. Trainum and Assistant Superintendent Gil Ray Madrid said the closed session was legal. The Pioneer is in the process of seeking legal opinions on the question. In other actions, the board approved the consent agenda consisting of past meeting minutes and the check register, approved a shared service agreement with Regional Day School for the Deaf, approved submission of the instructional materials inventory requirement waiver, approved submission of the missed school day waiver for days missed in 2020 due to the COVID-19 shutdown, approved donations of $710 from Gary Moore Amusement Carnival and $850 in classroom supplies from Israel Aldays, approved the purchase of two 77-passenger school buses at a total cost of $208,836. One of the buses will replace a bus totaled in an accident earlier this year, while the other will be used to take over the route of an older bus. The older bus will continue to be in use on other routes. Approved salary recommendations and compensation plan. Last lunch served. Staff served up more than 40,000 meals. USDA-funded program ended on June 30th by Steve Fountain. Back on March 23rd, no one was certain how long schools would be closed, but an effort started that day to provide a free breakfast and lunch to any person under the age of 18. While the schools never reopened, the drive-thru pickup lane at Fort Stockton Elementary School never closed until June 30th. With the funding from the U.S. Department of Agriculture ending, the food services staff served up its final lunch on June 30th, beef brisket with coleslaw. By the time the last car had come through at around 12:45 p.m., more than 12,000 breakfasts and 28,000 lunches had been served from the school since March 23rd. The only certainty was uncertainty, said Paul Casillas, the district's food service director. At this point, there is no other meal service planned for July to feed local children. After a cleaning session and webinar on July 1st, the food services team, sort of an all-star team with staff from each of the district's five schools, will finally start an abbreviated summer break ahead of schools reopening on August 3rd. The crew showed up every Monday through Friday at 6:30 a.m. for food prep. Breakfast was served from 7:30 to 9:30 a.m. daily, while lunch hour was from 11:45 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. The three women working the drive-through lane, Delma Sanchez, Martha Reyes, and Yvonne Acosta, had a banter like waitstaff in a restaurant. They got to know the number of meals needed as soon as they saw a car or truck enter the driveway across the parking lot. Six. Did that four come yet? Yes, they already came. They were even wearing special shirts given to them with a Rosie the Riveter image. In the words, never mess with a lunch lady who was on duty during the coronavirus crisis. When asked about the difference between serving students in the cafeteria and handing out to-go orders in a drive-thru, Sanchez had a simple answer. In the cafeteria, they have two choices. Here, they have one, she said. There's only this, and that's it. Pizza, hamburgers, and chicken strips were the most popular items. We tried to keep the daily menu the same each week, Casillas said. Antonia Avalos and Blanco Solis worked the kitchen on June 30th. No more than 10 people were allowed to work the operation under social distancing guidelines. On this day, there were 6, including Casillas. The workers not only got to know the cars, but had a chance to see current and past students from their respective campuses. The crew will have about 3 weeks off before returning to gear up for whatever the 2020-2021 school year brings. Murder assault charge filed by Steve Fountain. Christopher Galvan, 30, of Fort Stockton, will face a capital murder charge in the June 16 death of Randy Lee Clark and aggravated assault in the June 15 drive-by shooting that left Adrian Olivas in critical condition. The Pioneer filed an open records request for a copy of the affidavit from Justice of the Peace Ruben Salinas, but had not received it as of press deadline. A government entity has 10 days to respond to an open records request. The affidavit contains information from the law enforcement investigations. It is believed the prosecution will be assigned to the 112th District Attorney's Office. According to the Pecos County Sheriff Cliff Harris, Galvan is accused of murdering Clark, 48, at his home at 866 Oriole Lane. Fort Stockton Police Chief Robert Lujan confirmed the aggravated assault charge in the shooting of Olivas near Main and 3rd Streets. Lujan said Olivas is expected to recover from his wounds. He was initially listed in critical condition at MCH Odessa. TPWD confirms county bear sighting. A black bear was sighted in Pecos County just outside the Fort Stockton city limits on June 20th, according to the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. Since this is our first official bear encounter, I would like to get as much information posted about bears as quickly as possible, wrote Gabby Thomas in an email to the Pioneer. Thomas said on June 29 that no further sightings have been reported in or around Fort Stockton. One concerned citizen called in some bear tracks, but upon further inspection, it was most likely a raccoon, she said. If anyone has contacted you for further information, they can reach me at gabby.thomas@tpwd.texas.gov or the listed phone number. Thomas, the TPWD's Wildlife District Biologist for Pecos County, said the black bears have steadily recolonized the Big Bend region and other areas of West and Southwest Texas since the 1990s, adding that the dry spring weather conditions have bears on the move in search of food, leading to an increase in sightings in the area. There has been a flurry of bear activity in the Trans-Pecos recently, said Michael Janis, TPWD's Trans-Pecos district leader. Reports of black bears wandering into Fort Davis, Alpine, and Fort Stockton were received this past week on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, respectively. According to the TPWD, bears have an excellent sense of smell, and much of their behavior is driven by their appetite. These natural characteristics can, however, become a problem when bears find an easy meal from a human-related source, such as garbage, pet food, or corn from a deer feeder. If, over time, a bear continually finds food around humans, it can become habituated, losing its fear of people and creating a potentially dangerous situation. Precautions. Residents in areas where bears have been spotted should secure containers potential bear attractants like garbage, pet food, bird, and deer feeders. Residents can also choose to invest in bear-proof garbage dumpsters. Double bagging garbage to reduce odors and keeping bags in a secure location until the morning of trash pickup are also encouraged practices. Similarly, TPWD biologists recommend feeding pets inside or limiting pet food portions to an amount that can be consumed completely at each feeding. Particularly challenging to manage is the Texas culture of attracting and feeding deer. Bears are sensitive to electricity, however, so electric fences can be used to prevent bears from accessing feeders while still allowing deer to reach them because of their ability to jump the fence. Although an added cost, electric fencing can pay for itself in the prevention of lost feed and damage to a feeder. Black bears are currently a protected species in Texas. If you see a bear, please stay away and do not attempt to feed it. If you are in an urban or developed area, notify your local police or sheriff dispatch immediately and request that they contact the local Texas Parks and Wildlife Game Warden, noting the bear's size, direction, speed of travel, and behavior, especially when it is feeding in town, will greatly aid authorities in determining how to respond. Bears and humans can coexist well, said Janice. The key is preventing bears from accessing human-related food sources. TPWD is interested in documenting all sightings of bears and encourages reporting of any sightings to a local biologist. Biologists can provide technical help on electric fence specifications. Black bear facts. The black bear is a protected and rare species in the state of Texas. Male bears weigh 150 to over 350 pounds, and females weigh 120 to 250 pounds. Male home ranges average 20,000 acres, while females average 5,000 acres. Denning can start as early as November and continue until late May. Bears den in large hollow trees, brush piles, thickets, rock crevices, and caves. Denning bears go into a deep sleep, but can be aroused if disturbed. Females mature at 3 to 5 years of age, and on average have 2 cubs every other year. Cubs are born in the den weighing 8 ounces and will exit the den weighing 4 pounds. Cubs stay with their mothers for 1.5 years. Bears are opportunistic feeders and will eat almost anything that is available. Up to 90% of a bear's diet is vegetable material, which includes nuts, fruits, berries, and plants. Most of the protein in a bear's diet comes from insects like beetles, wasps, termites, and ants. Prime bear habitat includes escape cover, dispersal corridors, diverse foods, and dens. Abbott reacts to virus surge, county at 4 active cases, by Steve Fountain. Texas Governor Greg Abbott recommended people stay at home as much as possible as he addressed a surge in positive COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations during a June 23rd interview with KBTX-TV and Brian. "We want to make sure that everyone reinforces the best safe practices of wearing a mask, hand sanitation, maintaining safe distance, but importantly, because the spread is so rampant right now, there's never a reason for you to have to leave your home," Abbott said during the interview. "Unless you need to go out, the safest place for you is at your home." His comments came as the state reported 47,436 active cases and 70,714 recoveries. Total hospitalizations due to COVID-19 were at 4,092. Deaths as of June 24 were at 2,200. In all, 1,805,642 tests have been administered in the state. For Pecos County, as of June 23rd, there were 4 active cases and 33 recoveries. In addition, the approximately 65 cases reported among the inmate population at the Texas Department of Criminal Justice's N5 unit in Fort Stockton have recovered. The TDCJ's inmate cases do not count against a county's number. Any cases among staff, however, do. In another move, Governor Abbott scaled back a previous statewide order by giving local officials the ability to place restrictions on outdoor gatherings of more than 100 people, down from the previous limit of 500. This could potentially impact attendance for the annual Water Carnival at Comanche Springs and the Reunion Festival during the 3rd week of July. Both Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster and Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander said they would have to review active cases in the county closer to the events before taking any action. The governor also said the state would enact mandatory health standards for child care centers after prior rules became voluntary earlier this month. Around the county, Ira Ann General Hospital saw its first positive test result, with a 19-year-old female testing positive on June 17. The case, however, was assigned to Ector County, where she is self-quarantining at home. According to Jesse Dominguez, the county's emergency management coordinator, as of June 22nd, Pecos County had tested 861 people with 620 negative tests and 190 tests pending. In addition to the 37 cases assigned to Pecos County, 33 recovered, 4 active, 15 positive tests were conducted in the county, but the patients were assigned to other counties. Of those 15, 13 are recovered and 2 are active. Case number 35, a 78-year-old woman at Focus Care in Fort Stockton remains hospitalized at Odessa Regional Hospital. Additional testing is being done at the site, but no new cases have been reported. The testing numbers will go up with the results from a free mobile testing conducted by the National Guard in Fort Stockton on June 24. Early voting continues for July 14 runoffs. Early voting will continue through Friday, July 10, for the statewide runoff election ahead of the Tuesday, July 14 election. Early voting sites will operate from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday in Fort Stockton, Imperial, Ira Ann, and Sheffield. Voting will not be held on Friday, July 3rd, in observance of Independence Day. Safety measures will be in place due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Drive-up voting will be available. Early voting will be held Monday, June 29 to Friday, July 10. Voters who voted in the March primary may only vote in the same party ballot in the July runoff. If you voted on the Republican ballot in March, you will only be allowed to vote in the Republican election in July, and likewise for Democrat voters. Early voting sites. Early voting continues through Friday, July 10, ahead of the Tuesday, July 14 state runoff election. Early voting runs from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. Here are the voting sites in Pecos County. Fort Stockton, Courthouse Annex, 200 South Nelson Street. Ira Ann, Ira Ann Senior Citizens Building, 508 South Farr. Imperial, Imperial Community Center, 208 South Allison Avenue. Sheffield, Sheffield Community Center, 321 Pine Street. Council rescinds landfill contract, approves different bid. Approved bid did not meet specifications, by Steve Fountain. The Fort Stockton City Council rescinded its June 9 vote to award a bid for construction of the first phase of the new landfill and then awarded the project to a different contractor at its June 23 regular meeting. At its June 9 meeting, the council approved on a 5-0 vote a $1,356,494 bid from J.C. Roberts Construction for infrastructure construction of the city's new landfill. The council indicated Roberts' bid would employ the most people locally and opted against recommendations by Public Works Director Aaron Ramos and City Manager Frank Rodriguez for the bid of Onyx Construction, $1.285 million, and by Hansen Engineering for Stevenson Dirt Contracting, $1.268 million. But according to City Attorney Pooja Boinpalli, it was later determined that Roberts' use of subcontractors for 78% of the project violated the terms of the bid process, which required at least 50% of the workforce be employees of the contractor. So, at the June 23rd meeting, the council first voted to rescind its approval of Roberts' bid and then voted 4-1 to award the bid to Onyx. The opposing vote came from Ruben Falcone, who wanted the whole project rebid amid what he considered a flawed process that failed to identify the issue with Roberts' bid during the review of all bids, which the city paid Hansen Engineering to conduct. "I expected better from Hansen," Falcone said. "I expected better information in front of me that I could use, and I thought I got that. But if someone is not qualified, go down the checklist, and it's for these reasons, there were a lot of little things to be met. Even though we as a board look at the bids and what comes in, we rely on professionals that we pay to go through all the information these companies put together." Falcone also noted that the council had conflicting recommendations from Hansen and from Rodriguez and Ramos. Rodriguez and Mayor Chris Alexander noted how much time city staff have put into developing the project. Rodriguez estimated that rebidding the work could take 90 days or more and create an issue with the existing landfill becoming full by the end of the year. He added that the city is already diverting some trash to Odessa. Onyx was the only company among the finalists with experience in building landfills. In all, 33 bids were received. None were from Pecos County-based companies. The project is expected to take 90 to 120 days to complete. In other actions, the council approved the consent agenda, including minutes from past meetings and accounts payable of $238,901.44. Approved an ordinance amending the zoning chapter of the Municipal Code of the City of Fort Stockton to allow the placement of a manufactured mobile home by specific use permit in a single-family SF4 residential dwelling district at 1405 North Schlegel, owned by Eric Daniel Gonzalez Hernandez and Brenda Valenzuela Gonzalez, on behalf of Jorge Arturo Gonzalez and Sylvia Gonzalez. Approved the solicitation of requests for proposals for a 2-year service agreement for bulk fuel, diesel exhaust fluid, coolant, antifreeze, engine oil, hydraulic oil to be delivered to the city's maintenance yard and current new landfill. Approved the solicitation of sealed proposals from banking institutions for designation as the depository for city funds. approved the reclassification of the fleet manager position for the Public Works Department to non-exempt, as the position does not supervise other employees. Approved the expenditure of $52,600 to Texas Consulting Services by the Fort Stockton EDC for monitoring expense for asbestos remediation at 623 North Main Street and 507 North Main Street. Approved the purchase of a trailerable 1,000-gallon distributor for $35,379. It is used for spraying oil sealant on roads. It will be used on narrower city streets. The funds are coming from approved funds for another larger distributor that came in $112,000 under budget. Pecos County well under state COVID-19 rollback threshold by Steve Fountain. Pecos County saw four more COVID-19 cases move to recovered, leaving the county with 12 active cases heading into the July 4 weekend. Pecos County has recorded 1,079 tests, with 833 negative results and 49 positives, of which 37 have recovered. There are 176 tests pending as of June 30th. The county's lone hospitalization from COVID-19, a 78-year-old woman, remains at Odessa Regional Hospital. Out-of-county cases, those people who were tested in Pecos County but whose cases were assigned to another county, have 8 cases active and 13 recoveries among 21 cases. Pecos County remains well below the 45 active case threshold that would force it back to Phase 1 customer capacity limits under state guidelines. One case was treated overnight at Pecos County Memorial Hospital before being released to self-quarantine. Active cases among the inmate populations do not count toward the county's total, although those of staff do. As of June 29, the Texas Department of Criminal Justice's N5 unit in Fort Stockton reported one active inmate case, 68 recoveries, 19 medical restrictions, and one in isolation. At the TDCJ's Lynn Isle unit, also in Fort Stockton, no inmate cases have been reported. Statewide, Texas has 159,986 confirmed cases, of which 84,818 are now recovered and 72,744 are active. Total fatalities reached 2,424 as of June 30th, a 1.5% rate. Cases have been reported in 244 of 254 Texas counties.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, June 25th. County sits at 8 COVID-19 cases. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. No new cases of COVID-19 have been reported in Ward County this week. As of Wednesday morning, 362 persons have been tested, with 8 confirmed cases, 7 of which are active cases. 5 of those are from one family in Barstow that is travel-related, and 2 in Monahans, also travel-related. There has been 1 recovery and no deaths. Results of 50 tests administered are pending. Summer school and lunch programs were canceled last week, according to an announcement from Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD. A student was tested for COVID-19 late last week, but results are still pending. The girl is isolated and has no siblings, according to Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD Superintendent Chad Smith. The programs were scheduled to end on June 26th. The summer athletic program will continue, as the girl did not have any contact with any participants of the program. Quote, "With just a few days left, it was better to be cautious and end the summer school and lunch programs," Smith said. Across the state, 241 of the 254 counties in Texas have reported active cases of the virus. Texas now has 114,881 confirmed cases, with 2,192 deaths and 69,190 recoveries, or 60%. Commissioners vote to open community centers. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. More county facilities will begin reopening on July 1st as the Ward County Commissioners set guidelines for the various buildings in their regular meeting on Monday morning. community centers in Grand Falls, Pyote, Wickett, Barstow, and the Ward County Event Center will reopen for rental on July 1st. The commissioners set the following guidelines. 1. Group sizes are limited to 100 people in the Event Center and Coliseum and 50 people in the smaller community centers, Barstow, Wickett, Pyote, and Grand Falls. 2. No indoor dances. 3. If you have COVID-19 symptoms, you may not enter the building. 4. Face masks are encouraged but not required. 5. Social distancing is required. All persons must remain at least 6 feet away from others not from the same household. Additionally, each facility will be cleaned and disinfected, and hand sanitizers will be available at each location. The attendance guidelines do not apply to outdoor facilities like the new Ward County Arena. As such, the Butterfield Festival and Dance can go on as planned. Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez asked, quote, "Do we have the right to shut down an event if the guidelines are not followed?" County Judge Greg Holly said, "Yes, you absolutely do." The other commissioners agreed. Ward County Event Center Director Pablo Valle said, quote, "Yes, but we can't be expected to police everything," end quote. Quote, "Of course not, but the operators of each facility do have that authority if needed," Holly said. Commissioners present were Sanchez, Dexter Nichols, and Eddie Nelms. Commissioner Larry Hanna attended remotely. In other business, the old Thorntonville Community Center will be torn down, as recommended by Nelms. Quote, "The building is in bad shape. I propose knocking it down," he said. Any discussions for the disposition of the land will be held at a later date and was not included in the motion to demolish the building. Contracts totaling $1.25 million for the renovation for the Ward County Library were accepted. Contracts for the steel, paint, and carpet had not been received as of Monday, and the commissioners authorized Holly to sign the contracts when received. The bids for those three items have been received and approved, but final contracts had not been received. Payment of bills totaling $1.25 million was approved. Leading items were county payroll, $354,000, hospital payroll, $300,000, employee insurance, $86,000, hospital purchased services, $54,000, hospital supplies, $44,000, and physical therapy building for renovation, $25,000. Budget amendments recognizing a $1,000 donation to increase general fund revenue and a $1,000 expense for supplies for juvenile probation were approved. Two personnel changes were approved. Christy Pena was hired as a dispatcher for the Sheriff's Department at a salary of $1,700 biweekly with full benefits. Leo Lara was hired as a golf course worker at a salary of $1,600 biweekly with full benefits. The monthly report for May from County Treasurer Teresa Perry Stoner was also approved. The beginning balance was $61 million and an ending balance of $61.7 million. County officers' reports and minutes of the June 8th meeting were approved. The next meeting of commissioners will be held on July 13th at 9:30 a.m. at the Ward County Courthouse. Early voting starts Monday, June 29th. Early voting for the Republican and Democratic runoff will begin Monday, June 29th, and run until July 10th. Ballots can be cast at the office of the Ward County Clerk, located in Suite 101 on the first floor of the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen Street. Voting hours will be from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m., and the office will be open during lunch. There are no locally contested races, but one position will be decided on the Republican primary runoff and two on the Democratic primary. Republicans Raul Reyes and Tony Gonzalez are vying for United States Congressional District 23 of Texas, which is being vacated by Will Hurd. Hurd is not seeking re-election. The winner will face Democrat Gina Ortiz Jones in the November general election. On the Democratic ballot, the winner between Royce West and Mary M.J. Hager in the United States Senate race will face incumbent Republican John Cornyn in the fall election. For Railroad Commissioner, the winner between Cristina Castaneda and Roberto R. Beto Alonso will face Republican nominee James Wright in the fall election. Stipend for teacher aides okayed. Agreement for new elementary roadways approved. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Meeting in special session on Monday night, the trustees of the Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD approved a stipend of $5,000 per year for non-degreed instructional aides who are working in the capacity of a teacher. Quote, "This applies only to aides acting as a teacher when no certified teacher is available. It does not apply to all instructional aides," Superintendent Chad Smith said. The stipend was not part of the salary schedules approved by the trustees in the June 15th regular meeting. In other actions, an interlocal agreement for road construction for the new elementary school was also approved for the construction of roads to and around the new elementary school located in the new East Side development. The agreement is between Monahans Economic Development Corporation, the City of Monahans, and the school district. The action was tabled after the regular meeting of June 15th, after it was announced that a proposed roadway on the east side of the school would have to be moved because of interference with an oil pipeline. MEDC Director Ashley Adalto presented the agreement to the trustees. Dean Rasmussen of Maverick Engineering told the trustees in the last meeting that the proposed road, Victor Avenue, would have to be moved 50 feet to the west to provide clearance of the pipeline. Since the impact of the plot design had to be reevaluated, the action was tabled in the earlier meeting to allow architects time to study the change. R.J. Lopez, architect with Park Hill, Smith & Cooper, said the changes are not significant but will require a delay of 2 to 4 weeks to redo the site plans. The main building itself will be unaffected. Cost of the agreement will be shared with MWPISD paying 50%, MEDC and the City of Monahans paying 25% each. The cost has been estimated at $1.25 million. Moving the road will reduce the cost of the roads by about $113,000, but redesigns will result in higher site plan costs. Quote, "We have well over $1 million in contingency built into the plans, so even with these changes, we will still have over $1 million," Lopez said. In action related to the new elementary, the trustees authorized Smith to oversee the guaranteed maximum price of $34 million for the facility with Lee Lewis Construction. In a separate action, Place 1 trustee Steve Fine was given the oath of office by District Secretary Nora Hasso. Fine was not present for the June 15th meeting when District 3 trustee Donna Garcia and District 5 trustee Bobby Almanza were given the oath in that last meeting. In closing actions, Shayla Davis was hired as the new certified nursing assistant teacher at Monahans High School. Trustees present for the meeting were Almanza, Quintmilius, Garcia, Raymond Reyes, Nancy Upchurch, and Fine. Trustee Joel Greiner was not present. Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, July 2nd. COVID-19 count up to 18 in county. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. As of Wednesday morning, 19 cases of the COVID-19 virus have been confirmed. Of those, 8 have recovered and 11 are active, one of which is in Grand Falls. As of Tuesday, results of 65 tests are pending. There have been no corona-related deaths in the county. CBS 7 TV reported on Tuesday night that 2 persons from Ward County had been transported to Medical Center Hospital in Odessa, infected with the virus. Reeves County has ordered all persons to wear a mask in public. Ward County Judge Greg Holly said, quote, "I have no plans to order masks in the county at this time," end quote. The July 2nd docket of Ward County Court has been canceled and moved to July 16th. Anytime court is in session, either in the county or district court, persons entering the courthouse will be temperature screened. Masks are not required, but recommended. In the area, Ector County is now reporting 900 total cases with 8 deaths and 331 recoveries. Midland County is reporting 701 confirmed cases with 15 deaths and 156 recoveries. Pecos County has reported 111 confirmed cases, 69 of which are in the state prison, with no deaths and 33 recoveries. Andrews County has reported 82 cases with 30 recoveries and 1 death. Brewster County now has 137 confirmed cases with 37 recoveries and 1 death. Reeves County has 40 confirmed cases with 10 recoveries. Winkler County and Martin County have 16 and 14 confirmed cases, respectively. Statewide, 153,011 cases have been reported in 244 counties, with 2,403 deaths and 81,335 recoveries. Nationwide, as of Wednesday morning, 2.73 million cases have been confirmed, with 130,174 deaths. Men who displayed weapon demanded cash arrested. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahan's police officers have arrested 2 men who they say displayed a weapon at 2 individuals working at a shop on Main Street before demanding cash. Manuel Fernando Enriquez Jr., age 22, of 1302 West 26th Street, and Aaron Ruiz, age 21, of 309 North Allen, were both arrested on charges of aggravated robbery. Enriquez was also charged with theft of firearm, according to Ward County jail records. Quote, on June 12th, around 3 a.m., Enriquez and Ruiz allegedly walked into a shop at 109 South Main and displayed a weapon while demanding cash, Monahan's Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana said. Before fleeing the scene, the 2 stole a firearm from the building and took about $1,300 in cash, he added. MPD officers Beatrice Diaz, Taniqua Phillips, and Travis Andino responded to the call. During the course of the investigation, officers were able to get the 2 suspects identified and warrants were issued for their arrest on June 23rd. Quote, both suspects were apprehended on the same day during 2 different traffic stops, but with Enriquez in possession of the firearm, he received an additional charge, Quintana said. Both Enriquez and Ruiz were subsequently charged with aggravated robbery, a second-degree felony, and Enriquez was charged with the additional theft of a firearm charge, a state jail felony. Bond for Enriquez was set at $30,000 for the aggravated robbery and $10,000 for the theft charge. Ruiz's bond was set at $30,000 for the aggravated robbery. Both Enriquez and Ruiz remain in custody in lieu of posting their bonds. If convicted on robbery charges, both men could face 2 to 20 years in prison and/or a fine up to $10,000. If Enriquez is convicted on theft charges, he could face an additional sentence of up to 2 years in prison. MEDC agrees to sale of 9 housing lots. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The Monahans Economic Development Corporation, MEDC, met for a special meeting on Monday and considered approving agenda items such as the sale of 9 lots in the East Monahan subdivision, revised paving and utility plans for school access roads, and the East Monahan's Parkway paving construction change order. First on deck, the board approved the purchase of 9 lots in the East Monahan subdivision to Saul Flores, doing business as CNS Home Construction. Quote, the lots are located on Southeast East 13th Street and will come in at $24,000 each for a total of $216,000, MEDC Director Ashley Adalto said. CNS Home Construction has already completed building other homes and has buyers for these 9 lots. Therefore, there are no guidelines or restrictions for them, she added. In other actionable items, the board approved a revised paving and utility plan for school access roads, which would have to be moved because of interference with an oil pipeline. MEDC Director Ashley Adato presented the agreement to the trustees in a special school board meeting on Monday, June 22nd. Dean Rasmussen of Maverick Engineering told the trustees in the last meeting that the proposed road, Victor Avenue, would have to be moved 50 feet to the west to provide clearance of the pipeline. Adato said, quote, the change will delay the school construction 2 to 4 weeks to redo the plans, but would save them some money in the long run, end quote. In the final actionable item, the board approved the change order regarding the East Monahans Parkway paving. The new order only covers paving Parkway up to 8th Street for right now and comes in at $907,000. The decision to not complete the road all the way to Business 20 was an effort to save some money since the city is facing an economic decline and waiting until the economy turns around before completing the rest. The amended minutes of the May 18th meeting were approved as well as the minutes of the June 15th meeting. Directors present were Larry Bryant, Brian Franks, Richard Irwin, and Camilla Blum. Oscar Fuentes was absent.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.